Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Good afternoon, and thanks to Ollie Slack for the football show. And now for an hour of local food and drink. I'm Matt Bentman, and on today's programme, I go drinking at Thirsty's Oktoberfest.
I'm Sue Bailey. I go foraging with Steve Thompson of the Green Man in Grantchester.
And I'm Alan Alder. I get ideas for cooking with beetroot from our top local chefs. And I also hear from Hum Closen's Susanna Watson about new cheeses on sale in Newnham Bakery Cafe this Sunday.
Also today, we visit Cambridge Market to hear about Greek street food from Just Greek, and we go to the Emerald Food Stall to find out about their entry into the coffee market.
We also have up-to-the-minute local food tweets too, and a roundup of the local food and drink news. No Dave Fox with allotment advice today. Dave is taking a break, and we look forward to hearing his return, but we do get to go outdoors still. Over to Sue.
I'm sitting here in Grantchester Meadows with Steve Thompson of the Green Man in Grantchester, and we're going to be talking a little bit about autumn foraging.
Yes.
What are you? Would you recommend to forage at the moment?
So right now, what we've just been foraging is elderberries, blackberries, wild plums and damsons, lots of fruits and berries, rose hips, haws, all that kind of thing. The season's been a bit funny this year, with all the heat and the lack of rain, so a lot of things are finished early. So currently we're done with the elderberries now, when you maybe expect some years they still be going and things like that. A lot of things have been early, and then say for instance mushrooms at the moment coming much later, so we'll wait for the wet for them.
That's weird, isn't it? But I mean, hey, seasons are seasons.
Yeah.
So what are you using these in your dishes at the Green Man?
Yes, we use as many of them as we physically can, and more often than not in a preservative way. So we make ketchups, we'll pickle with some of the berries, we might do a sweet pickle, something like that to preserve them. We can dry things out, powders are great, cordials are great, that kind of thing. Jellies, jams, all your classic kind of preserving methods. But obviously, as it's nature, you pick as much as you can at once to keep for as long as you can.
And what are some of the most unusual things that you found in the meadows?
Well, we make, like, say, a meadow herb pesto, we call it, and that's using whatever greenery and plants we can find. So at different times of the year, that varies different greatly. So, say, springtime, we can find wild garlic, three-cornered garlic, otherwise known as wild leeks. Like, more this time of the year, you're going on your chickweeds, your lemon balms, your nettles. Nettles are always a good one. More springtime, early summer kind of time, you've got the hedge garlic, Jack by the Hedge, which is always a great one. At the moment, we'll be going out tomorrow and picking up loads of rose hips to make into syrup ready for Christmas. So hopefully we'll do some rose hip delight. Ooh. Over at Christmas time.
What's your going rose nicely. Hip delight?
So it's Turkish delight, but done with the hips instead of using the petals to make the rose water.
Fantastic. Wow.
So hopefully we'll have that ready for Christmas time. We'll be picking the sloes at the moment to get the sloe gin made. Obviously, we'll have to use the freezer to do it because we haven't had a frost yet. Mm. But I think at the moment, looking at them, they're going to be an optimum kind of condition in the next week. So we'll pick them, get them sorted, freeze them, and then we'll sloe gin them then.
But you have to know your sloes are, don't you? They're secret sloe patches in
yes,
Cambridge.
We keep them nice and quiet.
I'm sure you do. And any tips for anyone who is new to foraging?
Find someone who knows what they're doing and get them to show you. There's a lot of things that are very, very easy to identify. Good things to start with are simply nettles. Everybody knows stinging nettles.
True. And even this time of year, because most people associate nettles with springtime for the tops.
Yeah, we've just got the new growth just starting to come through. So you want to catch them when they're like nice and small. Otherwise, they get a bit woody and stuff like that. But if you're simple things, soups and stuff like that, you can blend them in. As long as you heat them, they're going to lose their sting, so it's fine. And they're a nice, easy one to start off. Things like rose hips are always nice, but again, red berries, there are certain ones you eat and certain ones you don't. But
how do you cook rose hips, though? Because you've got all this sort of furry stuff inside the rose.
Yeah, you've got all the hairs. So basically, you chuck them in your blender, blitz them up, boil them in the water, pour it over the sugar, leave it to cool. You've got a nice syrup. But you make sure you strain it through muslin bags to get rid of all those hairs, because they are an irritant. It's what we all used to use at school as itching powder. So,
oh, really? I don't think I ever did, but...
Yeah, just as long as you make sure you strain them off well, then you don't get any of that, and you get the lovely flavour from them.
Mm. And what about blackberries this year?
Blackberries were good. They were very, very early. They were coming in the middle of July here. But wow. Grantchester's a bit early, so if I go over to St Ives to pick, then everything's normally a week, week and a half later there. Over here, the blackberries are very early, and they are pretty much gone now. But we picked a load, and they're a great thing to pick in a large amount because they freeze brilliantly.
True.
So, or you can jam them. There's so many things you can do with blackberries, but they do hold their own very well in a freezer. Mm. And it's not a method, as long as you wrap them up well, that is going to cause them any damage or deterioration.
And what about elderberries? Because I think some people, they will do an elderflower cordial, but they don't know what to do with elderberries.
No, I mean, we did a ketchup out of elderberries this year.
Oh.
And it flew out loads, so we're not going to have it for much longer.
Oh, gosh, right.
So we'll be waiting for next year.
Yeah.
The elderberries, we were a little bit late on. They were quite quick this year. So, again, they're just gone now. So, yeah, there's not a lot left to do with them. But they're brilliant. They're a brilliant product to have. I mean, we just put them with water, a large amount of sugar, and some cider vinegar.
Mm.
Brought it down nicely with all the elderberries in. Blitzed it and then strained it off, and you have a lovely ketchup there. So almost just a sweet and sour
sounds
relish,
perfect.
Basically.
Sounds lovely. And what about some nuts? Things like beech mast or acorns. Can
yep.
you eat those? Do you forage those?
You can. We don't tend to do too much with the beech because they only come every 4 to 5 years on the tree, and they're quite hard to pick. So there was a few
that.
On the trees down near
yeah.
the orchards this year. Mm. But we did more with cob nuts, so off the hazel.
Yeah.
So we did quite a lot there. We tend to pick them as green cob nuts, so not as you'd know.
Sensible.
Because otherwise
the squirrels. Yes.
Exactly that. The acorns this year you can do stuff with, but the wasps have got them this year.
Oh, really?
The trees
okay.
in Grantchester, the wasps have had. If you see an acorn and it looks like it's exploded from the inside, it's the wasps laying their larva inside it.
Oh, wow.
So they're not really that usable this year in Grantchester.
Mm. And what would you do with acorns if wasps hadn't got to them?
Well, you just roast them off and then let your imagination go wild. So
sounds fascinating.
A lot of our nuts that we use, we put through simple things like them pestos, or we can put them in crumble toppings and things like that. We try and keep everything quite, if we're using a different ingredient, we try and keep an element of safety to it. So not to try and do something that sounds like a wizard's cookbook.
Quite.
It's still pub food, just produced off the meadows.
Yes.
So we try and keep it simple without going too wild.
Yeah. And I mean, it's lovely to think that people can go to the Green Man and then they can come for a walk on the meadows and sort of eat the food that you've produced and then appreciate the nature. And that's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing to have, really, isn't it? It's nice if you come down through for your early morning run or anything, you might see the chefs down here picking them. And it's what I want my chefs to learn, is how to do that kind of thing. Not everything comes in a packet or everything comes from a supplier. These are all real products that we have around us, so we should be using it and celebrating that we have them.
Mm, fantastic. And it's all local, and talk about footprint. I mean, it's as yeah. many steps it takes to get down to the meadow.
Exactly that, yeah. I mean, and things like herbs and fennel and everything like that, we grow in our garden as well, so we have a nice round basis to work off. I mean, the fennel at the moment is starting to get a bit woody now, so we'll take the seeds next, and that'll be the next thing for that. And things like your lemon balms and then all your normal cooking herbs.
Mm-hmm.
We have all of them growing in the garden. a lot of fruit we've had this year. The plums weren't quite as good as last year in abundance-wise, but in flavour-wise they were beautiful because the mm-hmm. sunshine really gave them a nice sweetness to the tartness.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really nice balance.
Mm.
And then it's just waiting for the more kind of early winter fruits. So as soon as we have the frosts, we'll go check on the medlars and see what we can do with them.
Perfect. Oh, that sounds really, really lovely. And then just a few tips would be, don't pick near a road, presumably.
Yeah, don't pick near a road. Make sure you wash everything well. Try not to pick just off the edge of paths. Mm-hmm. We don't know where dogs and animals have been and stuff like that. But the main thing is just make sure you know what you're picking.
Yeah, and leave a bit behind. Don't strip it bare.
Yeah, never strip it back. You always aim to leave it so it looks like you've never been there.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's good. That's a good foraging tip. I like that. Oh, well, thank you so much, Steve.
Excellent. It's lovely chatting to you, T.
Lovely to talk to you too. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, that sounded good fun, so I didn't know about wasps eating acorns.
Well, it's when they go sort of, I know exactly what he means. They explode and they look really weird. And yeah, you wouldn't even think it was an acorn. So
wow.
Don't go near those.
Right. And if you want more ideas for what to do with elderberries, listen to the podcast of our last programme where they were the featured food. You can find it on the Cambridge 105 radio website. Today's featured food is beetroot. And here's Flavour's Liz Budd on some food writers' reactions to it.
Jane Grigson said, "It's not an inspiring vegetable. I've never heard anyone claim it as their favourite. Her recipes include beetroot and orange salad and gratin of beetroot. Nigel Slater writes, "You either like the earthy mineral sweetness of beetroot or you don't." He describes it as having an unrepentantly earthy flavour and says it needs something bright and acidic to bring harmony and balance to a recipe. His recipes include beetroot fritters with gravlax and beetroot leaf sauté. Mark Diacono is more positive, saying that the leaves too are delicious, like a chardy spinach. Nikki Segnett, in her book, The Food Thesaurus, describes it as bluntly sweet, needing more than 2 hours boiling, with more than a hint of the garden shed in its flavour and a habit of bleeding over everything. She writes that it goes well with a wide variety of other foods, such as anchovy, goat's cheese, oily fish and walnut.
We spoke to a couple of local chefs to get their ideas for beetroot. They were rather more positive than Jane Grigson. Here's Alex Rushmer.
Beetroot, I have a real fondness for sort of earthy root vegetables, and beetroot, I think, is one of my favourites. It's something that I grew up eating quite a lot when I was younger. My mum used to make a borscht, a version of borscht, which I know has as many variations as there are cooks that make it. Mine is an incredibly simple method, incredibly simple technique, and it's grated beetroot. It's possibly a little bit of vodka if you're feeling the pull of Russia, vegetable stock, and loads and loads and loads of black pepper. Some grated beetroot, and you just cook that in the vegetable stock until the beetroot is nice and tender. Season that with lots and lots of black pepper, season with salt, and then served with just a dollop of creme fraiche and some fresh dill, maybe some caraway seeds on the top. It's really, really lovely. And it's probably the simplest soup I know. It is literally sort of two ingredients. And if you want to add red onion or apple or beef stock or potatoes to thicken it up, then feel free. But it is, at its most basic level, I think beetroot is an ingredient that doesn't need too much messing about with. It's got so much character all by itself, and lots of varieties as well. Great raw, it's lovely pickled, and actually it's another one that you could use to cure some fish along with gin or other aromatic ingredients. And what you end up with is a lovely, if you use salmon or trout, you get that lovely orange flesh and then that amazing purple exterior to it, which is really, it's quite visually striking. Really, really good on sort of thing that I'd like to eat on Christmas Eve.
Alex Rushmer there, and we'll have some ideas from Rosie Sykes a little later in the programme.
Now, time to don your lederhosen and your dirndls. It's Oktoberfest this weekend on Hills Road, and I am just the right kind of sauerkraut to try it out.
What can you get for you, sir?
I need a hunter, please, if that's all right.
Yeah, like, it's quite hidden, isn't it? Like, nicely hidden.
What, this bit?
Like this, like, thirsty's yeah. In general.
Yeah, it's really, really yeah. Nice.
Two hunters, that's not a problem.
Hello, mate, can I help you?
Three hunters, please.
This is round the corner from Parker's Peace.
Yeah, very convenient.
But it's not very obvious.
It's nice to have something quirky and different, yeah. You know?
Two more hunters.
Five in total.
Five hunters.
Five of your finest hunters, please.
Here you go,
bud.
Enjoy, mate.
Guten Abend, England has come.
So here we are at One Hills Road. This is the first night of Sam Owen's Oktoberfest. I'm just here with two chaps. I've been talking about music for the last 40 minutes. But what brought you here today, chaps?
Well, we used to work in the offices here.
It's our old office. Good to see it's being used without going to wreck and ruin.
So the idea of having an Oktoberfest in the car park, the office where you work, seemed a bit bizarre. So we thought we'd come and revisit our old premises and see what it was like.
Hopefully there are more of these events coming up. As I can look around now, I can see more and more people turning up. Looking like it's going to be a proper event tonight. Proper beer so far, been really good. Nice Weiss beer, recommend it.
Beer and cider and wine and Prosecco and cocktails and softs and all that.
That's Sam Owens, owner of Thirsty and the host of this Oktoberfest.
I met Sam this evening for the first time. He's actually a good college friend of my sister-in-law's brother. And Roberto, his college friend, who he saw on an old Gordy last weekend, had warned me how good the Thirsty events were, so it's good to come to one finally.
Sam, I've got this wonderful phrase I'd like you to say. You wrote this, or you said this.
Blimey. I wrote this. We're like an amoeba, an amorphous blob that can go in any direction. Anything is possible.
And that is Thirsty, in a nutshell, I think. That was your final line from an article published back in early January this year.
Yeah, I guess what I was getting at was that we don't fit into... I don't think I've ever fitted into traditional slots or pigeonholes as a bloke. And I think our business has reflected that. And so whether it's up at Chesterton Road and running the part shop, part bar and chucking in the food trucks, everything is possible. We've got a bus that's turned into a bar and our bus has got 14 taps in it. What's not to like? We go to churches with this bus and run bars in the gardens, and that's what I suppose I was getting at with the amoeba blob-like thing, as opposed to me overindulging in beer and resembling a blob.
Two halves of the Octomats. Sir, enjoy, bud.
Thank you very much.
The Märzen is very nice, in my opinion. The Märzen, I think, if I'm not wrong, the Märzen is what the typically Germans do for Oktoberfest.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, and, for me it was too strong.
Too strong for you, yeah? No, I really like it. I'm not sure if it's exactly the same. I think there's a bit of a British twist to it, but I like it.
This chap was exactly right. These are beers made by Gypsy Hill Brewery in London and Calverley's Brewery on Hooper Street, here in Cambridge, especially for this Oktoberfest, concocted in a German style.
I'm having Weissen Lager from Gypsy Hill, London, which is 5.6%.
I am enjoying another refreshing beer from Calverley's, the Oktomerzen, 5.5%. Absolutely superb. Sam, isn't it, the guy behind Calverley?
Sam and Tom.
Sam.
Yeah, so the boys, Sam and Tom, we've been long good mates with them. In fact, I'm a Sam and my brother is a Tom, so we're also Sams and Toms.
Very creative with the beers. The last one I had was a mango IPA, which was a beer like no other I've ever tasted. Absolutely amazing.
But then once we decided that we were going to do this Oktoberfest thing, it made eminent sense to go and have a chat with the boys, get some beers brewed together and get them out on the Oktoberfest. We got lots and lots of kegs here because it looks like we're going to have lots and lots of people this weekend.
You asked the right guy.
That is
I'm
good.
the biggest fan.
I really do like drinking beer outdoors, and we've almost the perfect evening for it. Yeah, end of September, we're outside in Cambridge. Yeah, it's great.
March to the table!
And no Oktoberfest would be complete without the food.
Food on the table, eins, zwei!
And the honest burger helps.
Yeah.
Reeled us in.
The Honest Burger Van. I'm here today at Thirsty.
Yes.
Today we're serving the Oktoberfest burger, which consists of the beef, smoked cheese, bacon, curry sauce, pickles, sauerkraut, and with the world-famous rosemary salted chips.
Chips, yeah, I smell them. Someone in the table nearby bought it and was like, oh, that smells of rosemary. The rosemary was so powerful. I was like, wow.
They are very good. They're very good.
I actually said to the guy, I was like, oh, I would have curry sauce on my chips, but I don't think it will go with a rosemary salt.
We weren't sure.
And he was like, trust me, it goes. So I trusted him.
Because we like the classic,
I wasn't let down. I wasn't.
You know, we like the classic burger, a bit of cheese.
And we're also serving the vegetarian fritter burger. We have also just developed another version of it, which is vegan friendly, sorry. We should be getting that into our store in Cambridge within the next month or so.
Lovely.
So if you are a vegan, we do now cater for you as well.
And as well as this Oktoberfest, Thirsty are also teaming up with MasterChef alumnus Alex Rushmer and his colleague, Chef Lawrence Butler, for a special pop-up menu at the Thirsty Branch in Chesterton. This will be on the day that our next episode airs. So, here is Lawrence briefly with some info on that. At 46 Chesterton Road on the 12th and 13th of October. That's your pop-up, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
So, really love Thirsty. Vibes quite well with the kind of relaxed style of things that me and Alex both enjoy. We're going to be concentrating on small plates, some old favourites. So there'll be a pig's head nuggets, which we're going to have with a caramelised apple sauce. This always used to be really popular at the Hole in the Wall, so we thought, you know, bring it back, good fun. So there's going to be 20 spaces available for booking on both evenings. Other than that, it's kind of general Thirsty rules. Turn up, and we're going to sling as much food out as we can for the hungry people.
And Sam's a bit of a character, isn't he? He's...
Yeah.
Just yes, to say lightly.
Yeah. Absolutely. But I love that about him. We've always enjoyed working with interesting people, and he's definitely one of those.
So that starts in just under 2 weeks' time. Two chefs from the acclaimed Hole in the Wall, which was named as one of the UK's top 100 restaurants by the Sunday Times last year, and they are appearing at Thirsty. And you'll need to book tickets in advance via the Eventbrite website. Let's head back quickly now to the Oktoberfest.
And the beer that you're drinking there, you've got 3 pints there between the two of you that I can see.
I'm a slow drinker, so I just nerd.
Two drinks Sarah.
Two drinks Sarah, that's what they call me.
And the chips with the rosemary salt.
Yeah, come to the Oktoberfest. It's cool.
It's cool, yeah. I agree.
I recommend it. It's a nice change. I love being sitting outdoors.
Not that we go out and drink all the time, of course. Yeah, and occasionally we have a cup of tea, and I can recommend some good tea shops as well, if you like.
So we've got 5:30 till 11 on Saturday, and then a 3 till 9 on the Sunday. And we're making that one more family-friendly.
Yeah, because it's kind of a wind-down kind of thing.
Exactly,
isn't it?
More
yeah.
chilled. Daytime.
Well, you can pre-book your tickets for this venue. It's £6.50 on the Eventbrite website, but on the door, if you choose to come on the door, it's
£8.50 on the door. Yeah. So I think Saturday night it looks like it's sold out. Mm-hmm. Sunday we have space and kiddies come in free as well. So.
And it's not very expensive.
Exactly, affordable.
Cambridge standards.
And you get your drink as part of that. You get your first drink as part of that entry ticket anyway, so.
Lovely. Well, thanks very much, Sam. Hope it all goes really well.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Prost.
Prost.
Prost. I said it wrong, didn't
ja,
I?
Ja, Prost, mein Herr.
And from robots to robins. Rockin' robins, actually. That music is, of course, the signals, the time for the latest food tweets from the city.
Alimentum have just tweeted saying they have one table free tonight at 9:15. That's in Hills Road. Brewboard in Harston, they're open from 12 until 6 today. The Black Horse in Dry Drayton has the Red Velvet Folk Band playing this afternoon in their garden. That's free admission. The Maypole's Italian Platter is back on the menu. They've just tweeted a nice photo of that. And the Bushel Box Farm Shop in Willingham, their cafe is open this weekend with things like date cake with honey caramel icing, plum cinnamon bake, raspberry chocolate brownie, shortbread, ginger and almond macaroons, all sorts of nice things.
You are listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio. Coming up, we have cheese, more ideas for beetroot, this time from Rosie Sykes, and coffee at the Cambridge Market. But first, some Greek food.
On Cambridge Market during the week, there are a lot of hot food stalls, more than there are at weekends, and there is some really good quality to be found there. George Bellos runs Just Greek, a very popular stall, and that's not surprising. He has a lot of experience in the restaurant business. I spoke with him on Tuesday.
George, you run the Just Greek stall on the market. What's on the menu? What's
on the menu, we've got a very simple menu. Because of the market, the stall is so small, you can't do many things. That's my opinion for that. And we've got chicken and pork. We do wraps in the pita bread on in the lunchbox. And very simple with traditional tzatziki, the real one. And Greek pita bread. We've got the vegetarian options as well, with Greek hard cheese. It's very nice grilled and served with salads as well, and chips.
It's nice to see chips.
Yeah, chips is not Greek, but, you know, we are in England, so we have to do something.
You cater for the English.
Yeah.
Right, what's the most popular, would you say?
The most popular is the chicken one, but people are interested as well in the last 2 or 3 months in pork, so pork is going off as well, and not halal food. And we have the sign as well to let the people know that our food is not halal.
Now, when I've been to Greece, I've always associated Greek street food With souvlaki.
With souvlaki, yeah. Because just for the people to let them know, we have this big fight to say. In Athens they call souvlaki, but it's wrong name. And all the rest of the Greece we call that gyros.
I see. Yeah. So you're calling it...
We're calling the proper name.
Okay, I wonder how many people know that.
Yeah. Right.
And there's a lot of sort of overlap, I suppose, between Greek food and the food of the Middle East, the old Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
But are there any significant differences?
I mean, the pork is a big difference. Yeah. But we keep doing some, you know, special way to our food. That's why it's Greek food.
Right. And have you always been in catering, or is this a new departure?
I've been in catering about 3 years now in England, but I used to do this job in my restaurant and working for some other people in Greece for 23 years.
Oh, right, so yeah. You're well practiced.
Yeah.
Okay, right. And what days are you on the market?
We are Monday to Friday.
Thanks very much.
Thank you,
George.
Very much.
Thank you. You've got some food from Just Greek. Have you eaten here before?
I have. I've got friends from Greece. I work with them and they always come. They say this is the best place to come in Cambridge.
Oh, really? Lucky,
yeah.
Well,
and they were born in Greece.
Yeah, so that's a very good recommendation.
Always come here.
And what do you like the best here?
Chicken pita. Yeah, with the sauce, it's really, really nice. Highly recommend it.
What's in the sauce then?
You got some chicken and you got some... chips with that and a pita bread, and you got garlic sauce, or you can choose tzatziki. Nice. So it's really, really nice. I would highly recommend it, definitely.
I might have some. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that sounds delicious. George Bellos from Just Greek, who is on Cambridge Market from Monday to Friday.
Anglia Ruskin University students are back and the Cambridge University freshers are arriving. So maybe it's timely to take a look at a few food-related courses that we all can take in our own time. These courses are MOOCs, which stands for Massive Open Online Courses, and they're free. Most have flexible start times, but you can check on that if you're interested in any of them. And here is Alan with the first.
Yes, it's called Science and Cooking, from Haute Cuisine to Soft Matter Science, Part 1, and it's from Harvard University. And in it, top chefs and Harvard researchers explore how everyday cooking and haute cuisine can illuminate basic principles in physics and engineering. During each week of this course, chefs reveal the secrets behind some of their most famous culinary creations, often right in their own restaurants. The Harvard team then explains the science behind the recipe. Topics include soft matter materials such as emulsions, illustrated by aioli, elasticity, exemplified by the doneness of a steak, and diffusion, revealed by the phenomenon of spherification, the culinary technique pioneered by Ferran Adria of El Bulli.
And you have the opportunity to become an experimental scientist in your very own laboratory as well, your kitchen, by following along with the recipe of the week, taking precise measurements, and making skillful observations. You will learn to think like both a cook and a scientist.
And here's news of free food available now in Cambridge, which you can find on the Olio app.
Yeah, and there is plenty available in Cambridge today. First off, a lady called Indra has a selection of coffee pods and capsules available. These are all from Crew Cafe. This is an ethical organic coffee company, compatible with Nespresso machines. She has Colombian and Indian varieties available for pickup by appointment. Indra is located by the river behind Newmarket Road Tesco. And then Anna, she has two things. She's round the college backs. She has a bag of Moroccan couscous mix to give away, and also some double cream, 600 mils, must be used by the 30th of September, and that's available for pickup anytime.
Now back to this week's food, which is beetroot, and Cambridge chef Rosie Sykes has some very nice ideas for it.
I'm a really big beetroot fan, and I love the fact nowadays that you can get all these wonderful different coloured ones. So the golden beetroot, the red and white striped beetroot, which is called Chioggia in Italian. It comes from Italy originally. I call it bagpuss beetroot because of the lovely cat, stripy cat. I really love white beetroot. I think it's got a really strong sort of meaty flavour. So if you can get a hold of white beetroot, I think it's great, either boiled or baked. When I boil beetroot, I tend to add some olive oil, some normally cider vinegar, maybe a few other aromats, a bay leaf, some herbs, and simmer it like that very gently. And as when it's soft, let it cool and peel it. And then I think it's really lovely in a salad. It goes really, the sweet and earthiness goes really nicely with things like horseradish, smoked fish. And there's a delicious recipe which I cook quite a lot, which is from the from Moro, the restaurant in London, which is a sort of North African dish. It's called biryani. And you cook beetroot however you want to, either in the oven, again, with oil and aromats, or as I suggested, boiled. And you whiz it up with some garlic, some toasted cumin seeds, and some yogurt, nice rich yogurt. And you make almost like a thick puree, which you then serve topped with crumbled feta, walnuts and dill and a sprinkling of olive oil, and just eat it with flatbreads. And that's a lovely sort of simple lunch or, you know, starter, or a nice thing to share. And you can buy beetroot that's ready cooked. I think that's actually fine for something like that.
But where do you get white beetroot from?
If you search it out, so if you go to a farm shop or even I think in some of the bigger supermarkets now, you might well be able to get it. But I mean, you know, red beetroot is wonderful too. It's just if you see it, it's worth giving it a try, and you'll notice it's got a slightly different flavour.
Right, that was Rosie Sykes with some really nice ideas for beetroot. Hum Closen's cheeses are back. Susanna Watson will be at Newnham Bakery Cafe in Derby Street tomorrow, or if you're listening to the Sunday repeat, today. And she came into the studio to talk about what new cheese she's discovered and to say what else will be at this month's Sunday Food Fair.
Well, I have a core range of some of the cheeses that we've spoken about before. Things like my Camembert, which I think is very strong, as in a good example, not always too strong tasting. And I have the Colston Basset Stilton, which is very popular. But we have, again, a bit of a gentle rotation of cheeses all the time. And coming into autumn, there's also always a bit of a transition towards the slightly heartier cheeses that people enjoy more in the cooler weather. So we say goodbye to the more summery things like mozzarella and feta and goat's cheeses and things like that. And we bring in more earthy, mushroomy, hearty, richer tasting cheeses that suit both the autumn and then into winter as well.
Right, like what?
Well, the first one I can't even give you to taste because it hasn't arrived yet, is the Vacherin Mont d'Or. And that is always a very exciting seasonal cheese because it's an appellation that's protected in France, and you can only make that cheese through the winter months. And it's only usually available from October onwards. So I will have it, because we're sort of on the threshold of October, on the 30th of September, I will have it next weekend for the first.
Is that the one that comes in the box?
Yes.
Yes.
And right. You can bake it. And the tradition of that cheese is that it was made when the herds and the families who spent their summers up on the mountaintop brought their herds of animals back down to their chalets in the valleys, and eventually through the season would become snowed in completely. So this was a cheese that could sustain everybody through the winter. And so to uphold that seasonal tradition, the recipe can only be made through the winter still.
Mm. Well, I had some of your Vacherin last year and it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's very popular, and more people are getting to know it, and more people are asking me, is Vacherin coming back soon? And some people ask for it in the middle of summer, and it gives me the opportunity to tell that story of the seasonality again. And people are always quite uplifted to hear that that tradition still exists. So it's a nice thing to look forward to.
Yeah. But talking about seasonality, we've just had a very hot summer in Britain and on the continent. What difference is that going to make to the amount of cheese, the nature of the cheese, the quality of the cheese?
The more dramatic impact is on the supplementary feed, so the hay that's used to keep animals through the winter. Throughout the summer, the levels of production have been kept up, and worryingly, this has been due to the fact that the farmers have actually been feeding hay and other food that they've cut and should be saving for winter through that summer period when the animals have been finding less pasture outdoors on the fields and on the mountains where they're grazing. I'm sure they're managing it in as balanced a way as they can, in that they're sort of allowing a slightly natural lower yield of milk for cheese making to occur as the animals are not eating quite so much, but also using some of their reserves to feed them as well. So the summer hasn't been affected too dramatically, but I think this winter will be the crunch time. And if we have another long winter ahead, it could be really difficult.
Yes.
As cheese buyers and maturers, and it's our job to try and help the customer to understand what's going on a little bit, and also not be too heavy with all the bad news and celebrate the good tasting cheese at the same time.
Right. Well, shall we celebrate some good tasting cheese?
Absolutely. So, as well as the Vacherin Mont d'Or, I have, since I last spoke to you, started buying some cheeses direct from a local farm in Norfolk. This is Ferndale Farm. This is a cheese called Norfolk Dapple, and they make another cheese called Norfolk Tawny. So I get these direct from the farm, which is quite nice because it means that I have quite close contact with the producer. And Norfolk Dapple, which you're tasting now, is a cheddar recipe.
It's a lovely cheese.
It's very nice. It's made with raw milk, both the cheeses are. You can get a real richness of flavour coming through. This cheddar isn't aged for too long, so it's already really tasty. But it's on the lighter side, so it's got some nice fruitiness to it, a little bit of earthiness. And I think actually if it was aged for longer, it could become quite strong. So I like to have it on this slightly more younger, delicate side. And the second cheese that they make is a cheese called Norfolk Tawny. It's a washed rind cheese. So the recipe is quite a simple recipe. It would have started out a bit like a Carefully sort of thing. And then the outside of the cheese is washed as it's matured in a local ale. It's made very close to the farm and near Holt. Washing a rind has an effect on cheese because it means that certain flavours are emphasised as the cheese is matured, because as you wash away most of the activity on the outside of the rind, there's one particular family of friendly cheese bacteria that remain, almost smoky, and that flavour prevails on the rind as it matures. So those are quite new to me, and I'm really happy to be stocking those too. Sort of wanted you to try those, and then to keep with the local theme, I've bought some Baron Bygod, which is made in Suffolk, and this is made at Fen Farm Dairy. This is a brie style. And this is a cheese that's been getting better and better every year. It's really great to see somebody in the UK really kind of master what is so long standing as a Northern France recipe for the brie and camembert family.
This tastes slightly like a camembert to me.
Is
that a comment?
Absolutely. It's definitely got some of those mushroomy characteristics. It's got a higher salt level than some Brie de Meaux in the market, and camembert always has a slightly higher impact from the salt. That gives you like a real lovely mouth-watering effect when you're eating it, and really makes it very appetising. So, yeah, I hope you enjoy that.
Yes, I really like it. Yeah. And the second one,
the one
with the washed rind. Yeah, slightly sharper, acidic almost.
Acidity is something that really comes into cheese, and levels of acidity are something that we really assess when we're tasting cheeses and grading them. But I think a bit of acidity is nice because it creates a sort of mouth-watering, appetising effect as you're eating it, and it makes it quite satisfying to eat as well.
You'd have to choose your wine to go with it.
Something quite simple, quite fruity, not too much tannin or anything like that would be quite a good option. So a light red or a softer white wine would be a good choice, or a beer. I think it would be a great cheese to have with an ale. So you get the kind of soft, sweet, hoppy flavours playing off against that acidity, and could work quite nicely.
Yes.
And I do have one more, which is a blue, Lanark blue.
Lanark in Scotland?
Yes, Lanarkshire is where it's from. And this is made by the Errington family, and it's a sheep's milk blue cheese. Mm. So it's a Roquefort recipe. Slightly more crumbly, almost British texture-wise. We always associate a sort of crumbly cheese with, you know, Wensleydales and Lancashires and Cheshires are all quite crumbly. And I think this has a bit of that characteristic to it. Lovely sweet and savoury contrast going on in the cheese. So the first flavours you taste are quite sweet, and then it really goes quite savoury, almost meaty at the end.
It's a lovely cheese.
I tried it earlier and it made me think of Irish stew almost. And so it can put some people off if you start telling them that their cheese tastes meaty. It seems wrong, but it is something that can happen.
Well, I think it's a really good cheese. And the texture's really nice as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is something you don't have to necessarily just keep it to a cheese board. It would be very nice crumbled onto a salad, or even into some sort of quiche or tart or something like that would work really nicely.
Mm. Wow, that's really good.
And Hum Closin' will be at Newnham Bakery Cafe Sunday.
Well, we visited Cambridge Market a few minutes ago. Time to pop back now because Emerald Foods have begun selling coffees and teas. Alan went to investigate and spoke with Tracy, then Julia.
We have been trading on here for 25 years and we've known Michael Matthews, who sold loose leaf teas and coffee beans, who'd been trading for 35 years, and he finally decided to retire, understandably. And luckily for us, he's allowed us to incorporate his teas and coffees on our store.
Right, and you've got quite a big range. How many have you got?
We've probably got about 30 different varieties of single origin coffee beans, and the blends, we've probably got about 20 blends. We probably buy about 5 of the blends in already pre-blended, and then the rest we blend ourselves,
right, and
using sort of Michael's secret recipes, but we're not allowed to tell you. But the single origins, for example, I mean, just for argument's sake, Sumatra, we have the light continental Sumatra and the dark continental. We also have the decaf version. And then we also have like fair trade versions of everything. So for example, we have Costa Rica medium roast, and then we also have a fair trade Costa Rica. So that sort of makes up 31 different types of...
But the thing that stood out to me was that you've got Cuban coffee, which you don't see in many places.
Exactly. No, we do. And it's funny, Michael told us that the Cuban coffee wasn't a particularly popular one, but maybe it's just the way we're displaying it, which is different. But they actually sold a kilo of that yesterday.
Really? What, to one person or to a group of people?
To about two or three different people. But maybe it's just because, you know, like you say, it's not a popular coffee, and, you know, they see it and think, oh, we'll try that.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
I think it's not popular because not many people know about it.
No, exactly. I mean, we're kind of... we're just kind of starting out in the coffee and tea trade, so, you know, the customers probably know more than we do. But
I'm sure you'll pick it up.
We're learning as we go. Yeah, we are.
And loads of teas as well.
Yeah, same again, we do a lot of tea blends, which also have some secret recipes. And yeah, we have speciality loose teas. So we have 3 different types of Earl Grey. We have the English breakfast tea, Irish breakfast tea, Russian caravan, the Darjeelings and the Assams.
Right, Darjeelings my favourite.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. First flush or second flush?
Well, first flush.
Okay, of course. And then we have all the different Chinese teas. So we have cumin and yunnan and China black. And obviously we've got the Lapsang Souchong from China and Formosa. And yeah, some Japanese green teas, yeah.
And lots of fruit teas as
lots
well.
Lots of fruit teas.
Banana
as well.
Tea,
yeah,
mango
yeah,
tea, plum tea.
Yeah,
I didn't know plum tea existed.
No, exactly. We've just had a batch of winter tea come through today and it smells absolutely fantastic.
Right, so what? That's got things like cloves in it,
it's absolutely amazing. I mean, I haven't even had a chance really to read the ingredients in it yet, but I can just go by the smell. It absolutely smells fantastic.
Yeah. Right, okay. And.
Have people discovered you're selling coffee quickly, or is it?
Oh my goodness, yes.
It was a bit chaotic.
Well, we've been on holiday ourselves for 2 weeks, so Michael was telling his customers about his retirement before he left, and the flower stall next door to him was telling his customers in our absence that we would be back in 2 weeks' time. And I think every single one of his customers descended on the stall yesterday. It was absolute bedlam. So yeah, they're founders.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're going to make your fortune now.
Well, if we survive that long, yeah. Hopefully.
Great. But, yeah, okay.
No. Sorry. Blue lady.
Emerald Foods are on Cambridge Market every day except Sunday and Monday.
And now, we've been featuring Olio on Flavour for just over 2 years. 2 years and a week, Alan told me. Oh. Its successful unsold food items or excess food in the home is posted on the Olio app, and it goes quickly. One of the founders of Olio is Sasha Celestial One, and Alan spoke to her in their office in Finsbury Park.
Basically, anyone who has food that they're not going to eat or sell for whatever reason can simply take a picture and add it to the app, and then users nearby receive notifications if they see something they like. They can arrange to collect it. The objective is to tackle food waste in the community through connecting neighbors and local shops.
And why is there all of this spare food? Are people buying too much or what?
In the beginning, we never could have imagined all of the different ways in which people end up with extra food. Whether you've simply bought too much, or maybe you've bought something for your child or a toddler or a husband or a house guest and they change their mind and they don't like it anymore, or a house guest, for example, leaves something behind. Whether or not you're going on holiday or moving house, there's lots of examples of when you might find yourself with food that you simply aren't going to be able to eat in time, or maybe you just don't really fancy it and you'd feel a lot better if someone who was really going to appreciate it had it.
Now, I noticed that there's a lot of food is never even gathered, you know, like on allotments. You go past allotments and there's always raspberries. It's always raspberries. So, I mean, is that a possibility, people giving surplus produce?
Absolutely. And in fact, when we did our market research, we found that 93% of the people that we spoke to would be delighted to go and pick and collect fresh fruit and veg from a neighbor's allotment or garden because they don't have access to that, and it's quite a fun and wholesome experience. So what we've seen is a lot of people simply taking pictures of their plum tree or their apple tree and saying, you know, arrange a time to come by and take all that you can carry. And it's a fun experience for the person who's collecting, who gets fresh fruit.
What about some of the big supermarkets? Because they've got quite a sort of bad reputation for food waste, haven't they?
What's often interesting to many people to learn is that half of all food waste in the UK takes place in our home, and only 2% takes place at the retail level. The supermarkets are actually rather motivated to eliminate food waste from their retail operations. However, when they do have it, it is quite shocking because it occurs in large quantities all in one establishment. Most of the supermarkets are working with charities such as Fair Share, Neighbourly, who collect the bulk of the food that can be redistributed within the community. Anyone who's interested in volunteering to work with a business, whether it's a big retailer or simply a local bakery or a market stall, should definitely reach out to us because we've got a whole sort of process and system in place. And it's a lot of fun to actually physically rescue food and make sure that it feeds someone rather than ends up in the bin. We do enable people to share other household items as well, such as cleaning products or toiletries or other sort of household consumable items that you might not actually want anymore. So we really encourage people to, if they're not quite yet ready yet to share food, to try sharing something that's more of a household item and then experiment from there.
I can imagine people might be a bit wary of sharing food. You know, if you sort of, I don't know, take something that somebody has baked, you don't know whether it's hygienic.
And that's absolutely true. That would be the same as buying a cupcake or something freshly baked at a village fete or school fair, or going over to someone's house that maybe you don't know that well for a dinner party. There is an element of trust involved, and also just being sensible and making sure that you look at food and smell food and use your best judgment and ask any questions that you need to ask to make sure that you feel comfortable the food has been handled and stored properly. What I would say is, It feels really good to give something of value that's going to sort of nutritional value to another human being. And it also feels really good to stop food from going to waste.
Just as with charity shops, a lot of people who find it difficult to afford nice clothes often don't go to charity shops. It tends to be often a sort of middle class or middle income sort of preserve.
Mm.
Any idea if that's the case with Olio? Are people who actually are genuinely finding it difficult to afford food, are they avoiding it, or don't you know that?
We have a real mix of users who are on the app, and we like to say Olio is for everyone. The reality is that the scale of food waste is so big that in order to make a meaningful dent in it, we need everyone to participate. If Olio becomes just the haves giving to the have-nots, then it quickly falls apart. One of the things that we've learned through speaking with our users is those people that are potentially in a more vulnerable situation or on a really tight budget, what they love about Olio is the anonymity. When they collect food, they're not sort of immediately pigeonholed as someone who can or cannot afford that food. So there's some privacy there in collection. And what we do see is that a lot of people like to use Olio because there's a lot of fresh fruit and veg, and that those are the types of items that you can't, for example, get at a food bank, so it can be quite complimentary. There are a lot of people who feel that they're on the cutting edge of the sharing economy, and they might consider themselves sort of really modern sharing economy hipsters, and those people are on the app as well. But that's one of the things that's lovely about it, is that it brings people together who might not otherwise normally meet in the regular course of daily life.
Yeah, and so you would go to somebody's house to pick it up, would you, if someone had some, you know, half a dozen lemons they needed to get rid of?
Absolutely, and having a half a dozen lemons that you'd want to get rid of is truly something that would happen if you had a party and you bought a bunch of lemons for garnish for cocktails, and, you know, what are you going to do when you've still got six left over? So if you add those to the app, you have a choice. You can set the location for pickup as your home. You don't actually reveal your address until you've messaged with someone and agreed that you're going to be giving those items to that person, or you can select a Dropbox. So we had thought that people would be choosing to use Dropboxes sort of much more than they really actually, it turns out that they do. People enjoy the doorstep encounter.
Sasha Celestial One there, one of the founders of Olio, the free food app. Do download it and use it.
Our second MOOC now. It's called The Science of Weight Loss, Dispelling Diet Myths, and it's from the University of Newcastle in Australia. This MOOC aims to enable you to make healthy eating decisions as you learn the science behind weight loss. It aims to dispel common myths and teach you the science behind healthy eating for a healthy weight.
So if you're interested in either of those courses, those MOOCs, and they're both free, you can find out more by entering MOOC into your search engine and let us know how you get on.
And there's Green Onions signalling the start of our news section. We begin with jobs.
Cambridge wine merchants are looking for full and part-time shop floor staff with an interest in wine. Training will be given. They also want a cleaner, a designer for occasional design work, and accounts assistant. To apply, send your CV to workforcecwm@gmail.com or drop it into any branch.
Alimentum in Hills Road is looking for chefs. To apply, send your CV to reservations@restaurantalimentum.co.uk, saying what position you're looking for.
And Newnham Bakery Cafe in Derby Street are looking for part-time weekend staff members. Just leave your CV at the counter or ask staff for more information.
Congratulations to Cambridge Cookery. The cookery school is 10 years old this week and the bistro is 3. And there's lots of free birthday cake on the house this weekend. It's at the bottom of Purbeck Road, off Hills Road, by Homerton College.
There's an evening of Brazilian chocolate tasting and knowledge called Coco Samba at Relevant Records on Mill Road. It's on Thursday, the 18th of October, from 7 till 9 p.m. Tickets are £20 from the Eventbrite website.
There's a night of gin and cake with afternoon teas and Cambridge Distillery coming up. On the menu are three cakes based on the tasting notes of three of the Cambridge Distillery's gins. And in turn, the distillery will be crafting three gin cocktails. This starts at 7 p.m. on the 20th of October at the Cambridge Distillery Showroom in Grantchester. Tickets are £30, available from the Afternoon Teas website.
three events in the Festival of Ideas that might be of interest to flavour listeners. There's a discussion relating to securing our food supply
to protect us from profiteering corporations and our own worst instincts. Tuesday, 23rd of October, 5:30 till 7 at the McCrum Lecture Theatre behind the Eagle Pub on Bennett Street.
And finally, extreme measures, how the thin ideal dominated the world. This is about the fact that in most socioeconomically developed nations, women experience extreme pressure to be thin. Professor Viren Swamy traces the history of the thin ideal, considering how different cultures and communities across the globe have responded to it. This is on Saturday the 27th of October, 5 till 6 p.m. at Anglia Ruskin University, and we would advise booking for all three of these talks.
And that's all we have time for today. If you've missed a bit or want to listen to it all again, remember we're on Saturdays at 1, repeated on Sundays at 2, and then podcast early the following week.
And if you'd like to get in touch with any news or comment when we're off the air, you can email us flavour@cambridge105.co.uk or contact us on Twitter @flavour105.
Coming up on Cambridge 105 next is Community Focus with Neil Whiteside. And then later on tonight, in fact, at 9 o'clock, Paul Cristoforo's Rock of Ages celebrates the life of Louis de Martino, who passed away in February. He formed the Martinis along with Agnes Martin and was the founder of the Speak Out Festival. Tonight on Rock of Ages, Paul Cristoforo will be talking to some of those closest to him. And they're putting on another Speak Out Festival in his memory next weekend at the Six Bells in Covent Garden. Hear all about it, 9 o'clock tonight. But from us on Flavour, that's all. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then,
goodbye.